ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of one of the largest and oldest wrestling families on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome the creator of the popular 605 podcast and the president of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, your co-host, the great Ryan Last.
Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Ron Fuller's Studcast. I'm the great Ryan Last, and it's my pleasure to be with you once again as we go down that road of wrestling history, and the Tennessee Stud tells us his personal tales and anecdotes all along the way. And today, we will discuss how the Tennessee Stud is going to get $25,000 for his down payment to buy Knoxville, Tennessee, and establish Southeastern Championship Wrestling in 1974. But before we get going, quickly, we want to thank our Studcast fans for listening and also our generous patrons who have already experienced Super Studcast number 14 with the dangerous Dr. D. David Schultz. It was just released yesterday, and it is a fascinating look at the man who slapped John Stossel and, of course, later became one of the most successful bounty hunters of all time. We will hear more about this later in the show, but first, the Tennessee Stud himself, Ron Fuller. Ron, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. So happy to be here, my man. Horses all saddled up as usual and ready to give him some spurs here, man, and get him out of the stall and out there where I can run him a little bit.
I'll tell you, between the recent Super Studcast series on the Knoxville Wrestling War and now here on the regular Studcast where we are at the beginning of your creation of Southeastern Championship Wrestling, Knoxville's really on the mind of all the Studcast listeners, Ron.
Yeah, and it's about that time. It's taken quite a while to get here, 80 episodes to get here, basically, and wow. I think it's going to be very interesting for fans from this point on about how it all came together and what it takes to build a territory. It's a monumental task, and I'm just going to do my best to lay it all out there as we go through this.
Well, where are we going to start this week? Obviously, last week was kind of part one of the story of you going into Knoxville, meeting with John Cazana, and making the deal, and now you had to put the deal together. Now you had to come up with the money. Is that where we're going to start?
That's kind of where we're going to start. You know, I'll maybe go back up and just remind people about what we talked about last week. For those fans that might have missed it and didn't hear last week, just take a brief look at what it's all about. We began, obviously, what's going to be a pretty remarkable journey to try to make one city, Knoxville, Tennessee, into an NWA territory. That's my dream. That's my focus. That's my thought when I look at buying this business. And a simple vacation kind of makes that start to happen. I watch a one-hour wrestling show from a hotel room. Just happened to be the night before I'm going to leave to go back home with my family to Florida. And I watch a pretty bad wrestling program, to be honest with you. And I get the hankering to find out who owns this company and whether it's available, whether the guy might be willing to sell it. And I start for the first time really seriously thinking about what it would be like to maybe own my own territory, my own company. So one week later, Kazan and I, we take a boat ride. I go back a week after we fly out of there. I go back one week later. He picks me up at the hotel. He puts me on his fancy little boat he has, and he takes me up the Tennessee River into downtown Knoxville. And during the course of this boat ride, we hammer out a deal to buy the territory. His price he offers is $150,000. I think that's pretty high, very high, actually. But I also think that there's something there, and that I could far surpass what he's ever done there over the many years he's been there, and maybe make that figure of $150,000 a real deal for me. But there's a whole lot of work that's going to have to go and do it and make things happen that will allow that to happen. So we basically shake hands on the deal for $25,000 down. We're going to pay him $500 a week until the $150,000 is paid off. And if I fail to pay him, obviously he's going to get the city back and his wrestling rights to the city back. So when we finished last week, I headed back home to Florida, and I'm looking to find the $25,000. The reason I don't have the $25,000 is kind of odd in a way. I had bought a home 2 years earlier in the northern part of West Palm. And sold that house, and had just recently purchased a different home, and it was a bigger home, and it was in a beautiful grove of palm trees. It was so private, and it was actually on 2.5 acres of land, and I had made a large down payment on the house because I wanted to have smaller payments, obviously, and I had to use most of my available cash to put the big down payment down. Well, I had no idea that I was going to take this vacation and decide I wanted to become a promoter and an owner of a wrestling company. If I had known that, what was about to happen, I would not have bought that house, because I'm not going to live in West Palm anymore. I wouldn't need that house. So it works out as really bad timing for me. So I'd spent $25,000 on down payment on the home, and more than that, actually. And I had 30 days now with John Kazana to come up with that $25,000 down payment or lose the entire opportunity to run my own company at my really old age of 26 years old. I still had the option, obviously, of continuing my wrestling career as just a wrestler if I couldn't come up with the money. But I was suddenly kind of obsessed with this opportunity to do what my father and my grandfather had done in their careers. Lots of guys could be wrestlers, but very few had the skills in the ring and the smarts outside the ring to run their own wrestling company. I wanted desperately to find out if I was one of the latter, if I was that type of guy that not only could get it done in the ring, but could get it done outside the ring and establish my own wrestling company. So finding $25,000 in 1974 for such a risky investment was not going to be an easy thing for me.
Ron, I take a step back. I got a question about home ownership, just because that seems like it would be a real rare thing in the territory days for a guy to be able to say, I'm going to buy a home in this territory. I plan to be here for the foreseeable future. Was it tough for you to buy a home in Florida? Did you expect before you did this move that you were going to be in Florida going forward? I mean, what was the thought process behind buying a home?
Well, my thought process was I've been there for 4 years, and I realized that the wrestler part of me and my wrestling ability is going to be in jeopardy at some point, that I'm going to be older there, and that I'm not going to be as popular, and I'm going to probably need to look for someplace else to work. But I was also a local promoter for the company. And that's what really made me decide on buying a second home there, is because I was doing pretty darn well. I was getting a percentage of that gate each week on Monday nights when West Palm ran. And that was turning into some pretty decent money, because business was really good, especially in 1974. And I would have probably been able to make enough just being a local promoter in West Palm and not having to wrestle. So that's why I bought the house, and that's a good question, because, you know, you don't know. Normally, when you go to a territory, back in those days, you didn't buy a home. You're not going to be there that long, and everybody knows that. Now, some guys bought homes because they really liked a particular part of the country, and they knew that they could rent them out, or they could just, lock them up and make sure that they were taken care of, and then go to another part of the country, rent yourself a place to live and stay in that part of the country until you needed to come back. I kind of got myself in a jam here because I had this opportunity. The guy wants $25,000. I don't have the money myself. So I didn't tell a lot of people about what had happened in this whole thing because I had, for a couple of reasons, I didn't say anything about it. First, I knew the price was high, and I thought I would be considered stupid, to his word for it, maybe, for even considering buying Knoxville, Tennessee for $150,000. I wouldn't even have considered it had not been for the possibility I saw in buying this one city that there was a possibility of ending up owning a territory that could run six nights a week. If I hadn't have seen that possibility, I would have never considered paying that kind of money.
How much did you know about the area already, Ron? How much did you know about the history of wrestling in Knoxville before Kazana or during Kazana's period of time?
Well, what I did know, and that's a good question too, Brian, what I did know is that I knew the promoters. I knew the history of the sport. I had grown up in the sport, and I'd heard all the names, and I knew the players, basically. I knew that Knoxville sits in an unusual part of the state of Tennessee, over on the eastern side. I knew that across the Smoky Mountains from me was going to be Jim Crockett Sr., and that's going to be in NWA territory, Mid-Atlantic. Very successful territory, one I wished I had worked, and I never worked over there. But I knew that Jim Crockett Sr. was a very reputable guy and respected, and I knew you didn't have to worry about him trying to come on top of you because he'd been there for a long time, and he was in a huge territory. Mid-Atlantic was a went everywhere. Lots of big major cities and long trips for the guys. And he didn't need any more towns. He had enough towns to make him happy and to make all the money he needed. South of you in Knoxville, you had Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was the nearest market to Knoxville. And it was more than 100 miles, a little more than 100 miles south. That market, Chattanooga, was owned by my grandfather, Roy, his partner, Nick Gulas, and there was a third partner named Harry Thornton that actually lived in Chattanooga and was their local promoter, basically. So these three promoters, they never ran any towns to the north up toward Knoxville any further than, say, 40 miles outside Chattanooga. Their history. I knew the history because Rob had worked there, and we'd talked a lot about it. I went in there and worked one time for a week in Tennessee, and we did a stud cast on that. And I got to work Chattanooga, and I realized that they weren't running a lot of towns, and they certainly weren't running up toward the Knoxville area. So there was no concern about the promoters in Chattanooga on the south side of the city. We talk about north of Knoxville. There's three cities up there. They're called the Tri-Cities because they're only about 20 miles apart. That's Kingsport, Johnson City, and Bristol, Tennessee. And they were considered to be owned by Christine Jarrett, of all people, out of the Nashville office. And she worked in the Nashville office, and how she got involved and how she got control of Johnson City. She basically ran in Johnson City, and she didn't run there very often. So the fact that she didn't run very often, it made me realize that she's not really thinking this is a big moneymaker for her. And I'm looking at it then, if I had Knoxville and I had these Tri-Cities in which there's a population of almost 100,000 people between those three cities, that I have a television there and I might be able to work a deal with Jerry Jarrett and his mother and be able to run that town every week. And we end up doing that on a Tuesday night, and be able to split the profit with them. And we needed it. You needed that bigger market to be in along with Knoxville, because those payoffs coming out of that Tri-City area are going to be good payoffs. And if your small towns that you're running other than the Tri-Cities and Knoxville aren't doing that well, you need to get that payoff up there so you can keep some good talent in your territory. I could run there weekly. And that was what I really wanted, that potential of running every week in another market other than Knoxville. It made it more likely that there was a potential for a territory there. North of the Tri-Cities, on up into West Virginia, it was pretty much open at that time frame. Crockett had been into West Virginia some. They years ago in the 50s when Roy had my father there and Lester Welch were there running basically Kingsport and that area there, they would go up into West Virginia. But there was nobody there. And there's television stations in Bluefield and in Oak Hill, West Virginia. I knew about those cities and I had talked to my dad about some of those cities and how they operated in that way back in the early 50s in that particular part of the country. And Bluefield, West Virginia, is only 200 miles away from Knoxville. So these cities were within running distance. I didn't want to get build a type of territory that you had to be gone every night till 2 or 3 in the morning. Every city is 350 miles away. I wanted to keep something small and close. And I thought if I could do that, even though I couldn't maybe get to where guys are making big money, they would still like to stay there because the trips are short and Knoxville's such a beautiful place. So you're looking up north there. You're going up toward the Tri-Cities. You go beyond that. You're looking at West Virginia. And then if you just take Interstate 75, which runs through Knoxville, and you follow that sucker north into Kentucky, there's a lot of nice-sized little towns along that interstate that didn't have much wrestling. Knoxville's wrestling, their television station had no signal, so they didn't even see Knoxville's television at all. So there was no wrestling up in that part of Kentucky. I'd heard a lot about Kentucky fans, especially the eastern side of Kentucky, and how they were very rabid fans. And I thought, man, if I could get some television that had a signal to get me there, those towns would be great for me. Going west out of Knoxville, the only other direction we haven't talked about, you have the Cumberland Plateau. This is about 75 miles out of Knoxville. Every town between Knoxville and that Cumberland Plateau was going to be my towns. They would be my place, my towns to run. Nashville ran everything on the far side of the Cumberland Plateau, on the eastern side. So I'm looking at breaking it down and looking at who is close to me, who I could depend on not to be a problem. If I could work with Jared and his mom, I see the development and the potential here for having a territory with just buying one town. And that really stuck in my mind big time.
Are you automatically thinking as you plan this out and look at the towns and see what the territory can be? Are you automatically thinking weekly territory? Is there any thought in your mind at all that maybe I should run some of these towns every other week?
Oh, well, what has to happen here is what I do is something pretty unique, actually, is I have two regular towns. So I'm going to Knoxville's established. I'm going to get that arrangement with the Jarretts, and I'm going to be able to run the Tri-Cities on Tuesdays, Knoxville on Friday. Now I have to cover Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturdays. Okay. And so what I did is because there's so many towns around Knoxville that are good towns and it's wrestling part of the country, great wrestling fans, I would just pick these, I call them spot shows. And every other Saturday night, I alternated between two towns. One was Harlan, Kentucky. The second one was a little town called Morristown, Tennessee, about 40 miles outside Knoxville. And every other Saturday night, I was in those two cities. That left me then with just three more cities to end up with a territory. And I just switched around. I tried not to burn up my spot shows because that's what a lot of promoters do. They go to a little town and it sells out and they go, wow, this is great. Let's go back in 2 weeks. And they go back in 2 weeks and it's not nearly as big as it was the first night. And then they say, well, heck, it's still good. Let's go back in 2 more weeks. And then it drops in half from where it was the first night. And if you don't be careful about how often you run these small towns, you can just murder them and they will die. So I did a pretty darn good job of figuring out how often to go to these small towns. And I had so many to pick from that it worked out for me. It just the whole thing just kind of fit together great and worked for me. So I got this one city in Knoxville, in essence, and I have a potential territory. It covers parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia, and some towns. Crockett had no problem with me running in the Smoky Mountains that were on the North Carolina side of the mountains. So I think probably I was one of the few people in wrestling that saw this potential. That thought really just kept me focused on the buy. And to me, it answered that question, is $150,000 too much for Knoxville? I didn't buy Knoxville in my mind for $150,000. I bought a territory for $150,000.
But you still have to find that $25,000 down payment that you're looking for. You have a lot of family in and around wrestling, Ron. Any thought about contacting any of them to help you with the money?
Well, geez, you know, you would think that's my first place to turn to. But, you know, I've covered this a lot. I have a very strange relationship with my dad. And my grandfather's not the easiest to deal with either. And I just couldn't go to either one of those two. I kept realizing, especially in my dad's case, that he's probably going to say no. And when he says no to me, how is that going to affect our relationship? I didn't want to take the chance of hurting what relationship we had by asking for this loan. Obviously, he's not going to give me the money, but he would have maybe considered loaning me the money. But I wouldn't go to him, and I wouldn't go to Roy, my grandfather, either, because I think that, you know, our relationship wasn't that close either. I had other family members, you know, I had the Fields brothers down there in the Gulf Coast area, but I had spent very little time with them growing up, and they didn't know that much about me. So I wasn't really the place I wanted to go either. So I got down. I had the 30 days time period from once Kazan and I made the agreement that I had 30 days to come up with the $25,000 to pay him. If that didn't happen, then the deal was off. So I get down to the last week, basically, and I sit down with my West Palm Beach promotions helper. His name is Mac. You know, everybody calls him Mac. His actual name was R.E. McMurray. And I don't even know what the R.E. stood for. Everybody just knew Mac as Mac. And, you know, he's the same guy that was getting all those hard ways back in the early 1970s when we were running spot shows. And he was trying to help me run these spot shows and getting his eyes busted all the time and having problems trying to help me. But he had always loved being around the business and the opportunity I'd given him to be a part of it all. He told me many times, man, I just appreciate Ron, you just giving me the chance here. And he was an extremely dependable guy. He was honest and a hardworking guy. And I had him doing everything except refereeing to help me run the spot shows. I knew that someday he wanted to be a referee. That's where he really wanted to put his time in. But I kept him away from that because I had no choice. He's in Florida. It's not my territory, and it's not my job to hire referees for the Florida territory. So I couldn't have made him a referee if I had wanted to. But I wanted to teach him everything else that I could teach him because I really didn't know this was going to happen, but it's just perfect. I have spent time here developing a guy who can help me run all these small towns that I'm going to have three or four of those every week in my territory. And it just works out perfectly for me the way it did.
Did Mac know that you had gone up to Knoxville for this, that you already clued him in onto any of this or the fact that you were looking for the money?
Never talked to him about it. I never considered it, you know. But one day in the third week, after I'd talked to Kazana, and I'm really down to the last time here, and I haven't really approached hardly anybody and asked anybody about it. So we sat down at his home, and I used to visit him a lot. He's a great guy, and we had a great relationship. We trusted each other, and we spent a lot of time together. And so I got to talking to him about, you know, hey, I took a vacation up to Knoxville, and he knew, you know, and I knew that he's not going to tell anybody about this because he, you know, he's a very private guy, and he knows and understands that this is just a personal conversation between me and him. And he presently was a worker for a telephone company. He had a day job, but he was helping me when he wasn't working at his telephone company job. He made pretty darn decent money. He always made himself available to help me no matter what I needed. He was just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And he had made a heck of a lot of wrestling friends. I mean, guys in the business loved him. He just had a certain way about him that guys would come and stay on Monday nights, and they would stay over in his house. He lived in a little small part of West Palm, just south of West Palm, in a little city called Lake Worth. And they would stay in his home on Monday nights and just to hang out with him because he was so likable a guy. So he had made a bunch of friends, a bunch of wrestling friends. And so as we talked about this, I told him about my second trip to Knoxville to meet the promoter, Kazana. And I noticed after that, he got a lot more excited about our conversation. And he started asking some great questions about, he said, you know, how much did they draw, Ron? And what kind of building do they run in there? And what's his television station like? And how's his TV program? And many, many other questions. So after about an hour of talking about it, he asked me just right straight out. He goes, did you and him discuss you buying it? What did he want? What was the cost to buy it? And, you know, as I said before, I trusted him and had no problem with talking about the deal. Kazana and I had agreed to. So I had no idea that I was going to find what I needed sitting there at that table with me. That's the really shocking part of it. So I just said, you know, he wants $150,000 and he wants $25,000 down payment. He wants $500 a week. He comes out and asks me, he says, how are you going to get the $25,000 down payment? And I was kind of shocked that he would even ask something like that. But when I said, then he said, before I could even tell him, you know, how my thoughts are to get on getting it, he says, can I help you with that? And I almost fainted. I was like, gosh, what do you mean? Can you help me with that? And he goes, my dad was in the telephone business and he bought stock in the company for all those years. And when he died, he had a lot of stock and he gave that stock to me. I inherited his stock and I got a little money, Ron, in the bank. And, so I'm like, wow, you know, this little conversation we start having is just turning into be just a wonderful thing. You know, it's like, he asked me, he says, Ron, if I loaned you the down payment, would you take me with you to Tennessee and let me referee as well as do everything else that I now do for you? I was just dumbfounded. I mean, I didn't know how to answer that. You know, like, gosh almighty, this is just too, almost too good to be true. So I was going to need someone to do all these things that he was doing for me up there in West Palm and kind of be a little local promoter for me. But I was hesitant a little bit because there's a lot of money and I'd be faced with the responsibility, obviously, of paying him back and worse still, losing his money. So I told him I had no problem putting him in the position he wanted, but I had great concerns about possibly failing and losing his money. He never hesitated. He says, I have great faith in you, Ron, and this will give me an opportunity to do something I really love and something I've always wanted to do all my life. So we agreed. I agreed. I said, okay, Mac, if you're willing to loan me the money, I'd love to have it. And I said, how do you want it paid back? And he says, you just pay me back whenever you can. And so there's Mac, my great friend. Mac and his money was like heaven sent. I mean, I could not believe it. We both, and the great part about it is we both benefited from this transaction for many, many years, for all the years we worked in Knoxville. And we're still best friends today, just like we were when we sat down at the table and had this discussion.
Did you work much more in Florida after your vacation to Knoxville?
Yeah, I did. I went back home to Florida after meeting with Kazana on September 22nd in 74. And I gave my notice the next day to Watts. I talked to Watts personally on the phone. I talked to Eddie and I talked to my father, all three. Had conversations with all three of them. I told them that I'd work as many matches as possible until I had closed on the purchase of Knoxville. I personally thanked Eddie the next time I saw him in person, which was probably the following Tuesday when I went to wrestle in Tampa. And I thanked Eddie for the opportunity he had given me not only to become a good worker, but to learn so much about the promotion end of the business. I thanked him for the money I had made over all the years I'd been there. And I thanked him for giving me that position to run West Palm and to be able to learn as much as I did about how to handle that part of the business. And I ended up telling him he was like a father to me, which was honest to God truth. He really always was. And whatever success I told him that I had in the future, it would be greatly owed to him. And, you know, in that actual conversation, we were in a room by ourselves when we talked about this. And we both cried a little bit. I had tears in my eyes and he had tears in his eyes, and he hugged me. And that was one of the most wonderful hugs of my life. It meant the world to me because Eddie meant so much to me.
How did Watts react? How did your father react?
Watts was like, "Are you crazy? You know, what in the hell are you doing, man?" And now I wasn't surprised. I mean, you know, I leveled with him. You know, I told him what the price was, and Watts was like, "Man, that's just one town, and you know, and that town has never been a great town. What in the hell do you think you can do there to make this so good?" And so I, you know, I. And when I talked to my dad, it was even worse. He was like, $150,000, boy, are you serious? You know, and I kept saying, "Well, Dad, I think there's more than just a town there. I believe there's a way to create a territory there and work six nights a week, seven nights a week if I wanted to." And, you know, I got about the reaction I thought I would get from my dad. He was thumbs down on it. "This is never going to work. You're making a big mistake." Watts really wanted to keep me within the territory at that point, I believe. And I was drawing him some money and he didn't want to lose me. Eddie was the only one that really gave me the feeling that, you know, and when I think back about it, Brian, I think Eddie would have been the guy that would have given me the money if I had asked. But I just, I had a hard time. I had a hard time making myself talk to people about this and asking for that kind of loan for that type of chance that I was taking. I talked to Kazana a couple of days after returning to Florida. Confirm my intentions to purchase the town, and we set a tentative date for my first match in Knoxville on Friday night, October 11th, 1974. And we agreed that if we're not closed by that date, I would work every Friday night until we had our closing. And so that's when I started, on Friday night, October 11th, 1974, had my first matches in Knoxville. And back to your question about the Florida dates, I worked on April 22nd after September 22nd when I went up there and sat down with Kazana and worked out the deal. I worked eight more total times in Florida. I worked twice in Fort Myers against a guy named Gil Hayes. I worked twice in Miami Beach, one match with Pac Song and one with Tora Tanaka. I worked once in Fort Lauderdale in a tag match with Vic Rossitani. as a partner, and we wrestled against all three of the Hollywood Blondes, Buddy Roberts, Jerry Brown, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck in a handicap match. We was the two of us against the three of them, and falls counted anywhere in that building in Fort Lauderdale. We ended up winning that match. I was really surprised. I couldn't believe, but it was pretty easy to beat Humperdinck. And I think I got Humperdinck, and somehow the other two boys got separated, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. It was too late to help their big fat partner, their manager, I should say. So I worked once in Orlando against Greg Valentine in a Texas death match, once in Jacksonville against Jerry Briscoe, which was a tremendous match, and once in West Palm Beach against Pac Song, for he was the Southern heavyweight champion at that time, for his belt. And the crazy thing about it, Brian, is I would only work three more matches in the Florida territory ever after that date. I worked West Palm Beach with Bill Watts in a lights out match on Monday night, December 30th, 1974. This is after I had already gone to Knoxville and started working there. I came back to wrestle Watts in a lights out match in West Palm because I was still over big time there, had been my town, and they were really pushing me there and had been for years. I go back to West Palm again 6 months later on June the 30th, 1975. I'm going to wrestle in a Florida title match against the champion, Bob Roop, of all people. Then my last match ever in the Tampa territory was on Tuesday, July 1st, 1975, in Tampa against Killer Carl Krupp for the Southern Heavyweight Championship. And now look back... you know, Brian, in anticipation of doing this studcast and counted my actual matches that I had in the state of Florida in that territory from the day I went in until that last match in December, on July 1st of 1975. And I wrestled in the Florida territory 938 matches. And that is not including televised matches. So probably easily I had 1,000 total matches in the state of Florida, in the Florida territory, in 4 years that I was there.
As we move on from Florida, we will return with more of the Studcast in just a moment. But first, a word about the Super Studcast for patrons at patreon.com/studcast or tnstud.com.
The last Super Studcast, number 13, was about the dangerous and destructive Southeastern Knoxville Wrestling War of 1979. This one, Super Studcast, number 14, is about danger again, but this time it walks on two legs. We're talking about Dr. D, David Schultz. The Stud takes us on another journey with his friend of more than 40 years and trained by Herb Welch, his grandfather's brother, the man responsible for the slap heard around the world of John Stossel live on national television during a WWE broadcast, and one of the most successful bounty hunters of all time. He was one of the most dangerous men to ever enter a wrestling ring, and maybe even more dangerous for those on the wrong side of the law. This Super Studcast will keep you on the edge of your seat. Welcome to Super Studcast number 14. Dr. D, David Schultz, at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Only $2.99 for three unforgettable hours of wrestling history.
There you hear it, the Super Studcast, always available at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Of course, Super Studcast number 13. Everyone is still talking about it. We're still on the subject of Knoxville. All about the Knoxville Wrestling War and the just released Super Studcast number 14 with Dr. D, David Schultz. More information at the end of the program. But Ron, let's get back to your story. There's so much going on. How do you feel at this point in your life, Ron?
Well, I tell you, there's a lot happening in my life at this point, and things that I had never considered. I was thinking that I was going to have to leave Florida soon. I was going to have to go somewhere else and wrestle. I didn't even consider buying a territory or being an owner or being a promoter. That was just not in my thought process at all. And this what I'm about to do in Knoxville, it's just fraught with challenges. It's just everything is, you know, and my mind's just constantly filled with questions. I got my biggest question is about my decision to invest in something as potentially disastrous as buying a wrestling business. I mean, so many people fail at running a wrestling company, and I knew that. I'd grown up in it. I had seen it. My dad never failed. He was fantastic at what he did. Roy obviously had tremendous success at it, but there's no guarantee. I'm like my dad and my grandfather when it comes to running the wrestling company. This is just something that I thought I could do. And, you know, when you thought about it back in this time frame, Brian, there were probably only about 30 total wrestling promoters worldwide. In the world in 1974. So it's not a job that just anybody can do. If it was, there'd be 300 of them rather than 30. So, and most of those 30 are not tremendously successful. So obviously I'm going to be the youngest ever to try this. And I'm going to, and I have a very limited knowledge of what I'm really getting into. I'm sticking my neck out there big time. I have borrowed money from a friend of mine, and I'm certainly obligated in my mind. I'm going to pay him no matter what happens here. He will get his money back. And I'm about to jump into something that I really don't know whether I'm ready for or not, but, I can't hardly wait to do it, though.
Do you think your age creates any problems for you? At this time, obviously, I'm speaking.
Yeah, well, of course it does. You know, I mean, the main difficulty with my age is building respect. I mean, I'm 26 years old. Respect in the wrestling business is always difficult, especially as a promoter or owner of a company. I mean, you've talked to enough wrestlers, you know their feelings about promoters and owners of companies, you know, that you have to earn that respect. And I'm 26 years old. I'm just gained some respect as a wrestler in the ring. I'm pretty darn good and I have that respect. But as far as being able to take over a territory or build a territory from a town, I mean, who would even think that there's any way I could accomplish that? But, you know, respect almost always comes through success. And at my age, it's going to take a while for me to earn that respect. The quickest way to earn respect is to be successful. And until you're able to accomplish that, you'll never have respect, no matter what your age is. So, you know, I realize that I've got to make it happen now. I've committed my friend's money. I've committed my life and my future. I have so much commitment here that I'm dead set that I'm going to make it happen. I will make it happen. But I'm pretty light on the concept of what all I'm getting into. It's really, really going to be a challenge, an extreme challenge.
From everything you witnessed growing up around wrestling and being in the wrestling business, did you think you knew everything you needed to know about how to be a success?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a young and dumb guy, you know. I mean, I think, yeah, I'm brilliant, you know. Of course, I know what I need to do. But I don't, because every territory is different. Every city is different. The fans are different and they buy different things. And you have to learn who you're dealing with. There's so many things that go into making it happen. I'm just there and saying, oh, I can do this. I can do this. But gosh, man, you know, I'm just really sticking my neck out there and I don't even realize how far I'm sticking it out there. Obviously I have some very intelligent support from people that have done it and been extremely successful. I'm fortunate. I'm extremely fortunate for in that respect. I have the counsel of guys like my grandfather, Roy Welch, my dad, who has been in it and done it many different territories and always had huge success. I got Eddie Graham that I can pick up the phone and call Eddie and ask him questions anytime I want to. I've even got a nearby promoter now who's a friend of mine because I've worked for him in Australia, Jim Barnett. Now he's in Atlanta and he's available to me to counsel me as well. So I have influential friends and associates, not only those four, but I've got Sam Muchnick, the president of the National Wrestling Alliance, is a big fan of mine. He really thinks I've got great talent in the ring, and I can call Sam anytime I needed Sam. I could call any of these five guys. The combined experience of just these five men alone is well over 200 years in the sport. It's just amazing. You know, with Sam Muchnick and Jim Barnett, you're looking at 100 years of experience. And between the other three, my granddad's in there too in that same time. It's just amazing how much experience that I can draw from these guys if I needed to. I'll be honest with you, I really never tapped into it very often, very seldom I did. But I realized that how much benefit there's going to be in being a part. There's a great benefit for me in being a part of the oldest and largest wrestling family on the planet. And only I am going to be able to make it happen. I could fill my new company's rings with all Welch family members if I needed to. There's enough members of my family wrestling in 1974 that I could have cards full of just my family members if I wanted to. Nobody else in the sport could make that claim, but that wouldn't work, even if it was possible. In the end, it's all on my shoulders to make it happen. And if I fail, I have no one to blame but myself. I have the power. I have proven I can do it as a wrestler. But this owner part is a totally different animal. These five men can offer support and suggestions, hundreds of them, but they are never going to move to Knoxville. They're never going to sit in my living room and tell me the next move to make. And it's going to be totally up to me to make this happen. And the pressure and the results they're squarely on my back and only my back. I'm the only one that's going to be responsible for getting it done if it gets done.
Let's go back to your decision to try and make a town into a territory. At that time, right away, did you really believe that you could make it work?
Yes. I started seeing the picture when I was on the boat talking to Kazana about, and I asked him about his small towns and did he ever run the small towns around Knoxville? And because he wasn't on the proper station, he didn't run very much. He couldn't tell me what to expect out there from the smaller cities. I was very concerned about the quality of the several things were huge question marks for me. And one of them right off the top was the quality of the television program. And I was just as concerned about the station that not only didn't reach, but about 40 miles from the center of downtown. Let's just break the TV show down to speak about due to the quality. Let's speak about the quality of the show. I'd spent years associated with the best wrestling program in the world, the Florida Show and Gordon Solie. I mean, they had it down pat. And, you know, I thought I knew what they did and why it worked and how they made it work. But you're never sure about that stuff until you try to build a better show. And I know I have a new commentator. If I had a better show, in order to build a better show, I know I'd need a new commentator because I don't like Big Jim Hess and his warp your head off holes. I think he's not a comic. He's horrible, in my opinion. I need a better cameraman. I need a better director who is a key person when you're producing a wrestling program. He's the guy that gets you the shots, and he's the one that's going to pick up the little things and keep you, though you're sitting at home, you feel like you're right there in that building. That's the director that gets that done. I needed better wrestlers. I knew that I needed better wrestlers than what I'd seen on this Knoxville show. And something that makes the show, I needed something else that makes the show stand out from other shows. And I had ideas. I had a great friend, Les Thatcher, and we had spent some time in Florida and when I first went there, and he loved to, he wanted to be, his goal in life was to be a television commentator. And he had these ideas that we talked about, and I loved his ideas. So he had ideas about doing instant replays and doing split screens and doing personality profiles in the middle of programs and all these ideas that would make that wrestling show stand out from others. So I had all these ideas that I'd gotten from guys that were around me. But you don't know whether your idea is going to work or not until you try them. And that's where the real answer is. What's going to happen when you actually try them? And then let's talk about the problem of the range of the signal of this television station that they're on. Now, that's a problem that cannot be solved by staying on the present station. They're not going to. I can't go in there and say, listen, guys, your signal doesn't get out more than 40 miles. Can you get yourself a bigger tower? And is there any way you can pump that signal out there 100 miles? Well, you know, that's not going to happen. So I'm going to have to find a VHF station. This is a UHF station that they're on, which means it doesn't have a very big signal. To be quite honest with you, that's the basic difference between a UHF and a VHF. And I'm going to need a major network station, which is either with CBS, ABC, or an NBC affiliate. If you don't get those, you're not going to get the big signal. And that's not going to be easy because of the poor quality of the present show. I realize that when I go to try to sell myself and to sell them on the concept that I'm going to have a better program than you've ever seen and all of that, it's going to be difficult because they're just going to think that wrestling is like that show that we see. And that's going to make it very, very difficult for me to make that sale. But I got to figure out how I can sell another station, one of the big stations. Because that station has to be powerful. It has to have that signal that can get my show into more cities, certainly than it presently is. I need to tap into all those small towns within 100 miles of Knoxville. And that's what I'm going to have to work on. If I'm going to be successful, that's another thing that really worries me. Can I do this? And I ask myself, if I can accomplish that, then I need to get on other stations, not just in Knoxville, but in other markets. And I have to build a relationship with many different owners. Jerry Jarrett and his mother, Christine, are already on my radar because they own Johnson City, Kingsport, and Bristol, Tennessee. And I need another regular weekly city to run in. If I'm going to have a territory, I need that second every Tuesday night. I need another night every week that you're going to be in the same city. The Tri-Cities, Kingsport, Bristol, Johnson City, they're perfect. They're close by. The population is there. It's about 100,000 people between those three cities. They're only 20 miles apart, each of them, in a triangular shape pattern. They get that television signal, all of the three cities, no matter which television station you're on up there. And oddly enough, it's where my father began his promotion training from my granddad Roy back in 1950 when I was 2 years old. We moved from Dyersburg, Tennessee, where I was born, to the eastern side of Tennessee and lived in Kingsport for 3-4 years before Dad left there, went to Mobile and created the monster called Gulf Coast Wrestling. And so when he's young, practically the same age I am now, he goes to Kingsport, Tennessee, and starts running promotion for his father. And then he does a great job at it. He didn't have the added stress, obviously, of being the owner. He's only working there as a wrestler and a local promoter for his father. But this Tri-Cities arrangement was an absolute must for me to be able to create a territory in Knoxville. I had to make that Tri-Cities thing happen.
Ron, let's go back to something you mentioned a little bit earlier. You and John Kazana had agreed in advance upon when you would enter Knoxville, when you would make your debut. When did you have your first match and who did you work with?
I had my first match ever in Knoxville on Friday, October 11th, 1974. I got to say that, you know, in that part of the country, October is absolutely beautiful. I've never seen such beauty as all the leaves and the trees and the mountains in the background. And it was just a fantastic place to be in the month of October. And I'm going to wrestle in the Jacobs Building at Chilhowie Park. There's a park there on the eastern side of Knoxville where they hold the fair every year. And it has a long, thin building that sits on the top of a hill in that park called Jacobs Building. And that's where I'm going to be wrestling. And I'm going to wrestle against a guy named Dennis Hall. And I had never wrestled Dennis Hall, but I was familiar with Dennis Hall. He'd been around Tennessee for many years, and obviously it's my first time to ever work with him. But I'm familiar with him because he's good friends with Les Thatcher. And I just spoke about Thatcher earlier, you know, and when I came to Florida in 1970, Les and I spent a lot of time. We were best friends. We traveled together. We spent a heck of a lot of time together. And he told me about stories about Dennis Hall. And there's another guy named Ken Lucas, who was a tremendous worker, Lucas, and that both of them worked with Les in the Maritimes up in Canada. And so I knew that name of Dennis Hall, but I'd never worked with Dennis Hall. And it was not a large crowd that night. And I was actually pretty happy that it wasn't the night that I was going to take over the company, because it didn't look like to me there was going to be any money made there. I would officially be the new owner of Knoxville 2 weeks after that night. That night was Friday, October 11th. And on Friday, October 25th, 1974, Knoxville Wrestling changed from John Kazana to Southeastern Championship Wrestling.
Well, what better place than there to end it this week? And we'll pick up the story where we ended it next week here on the Studcast. But as we wrap things up, we want to remind you, you can become friends with Ron on Facebook. The page, Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Just simply like that page and boom, you're friends with the Tennessee Stud. Of course, you can follow the Stud on Instagram and Twitter at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow me on Twitter at Great Brian Last. And you can hear me on the 605 Super Podcast at 605pod.com or available wherever it is that you find your favorite podcasts for classic wrestling talk and wrestling humor, the 605 Super Podcast. Be sure to check out the Super Studcast, of course, Super Studcast 13, all about the Knoxville Wrestling War, an amazing two-part episode covering everything from 1979. And don't miss the brand new Super Studcast number 14 with Dr. D. David Schultz, all available at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast for only $2.99. Ron, any thoughts you want to give this week about the latest Super Studcast? We just released it, number 14 with Dr. D. David Schultz.
I loved it. I really had a ball. I mean, Schultz is a character and always was a character. And, you know, the John Stossel deal where he slapped John Stossel on national television, I happened to be watching that program live that night, saw that happen. I was like, wow, man, you've just made a name for yourself, Dave. And then to go into bounty hunting, of all things, and to have such success that he had in bounty hunting, it's just truly an amazing broadcast. And I think fans, if you want to get a different perspective on wrestling and you want to hear from a guy who is truly dangerous. And I say that because that's honest. David Schultz is quite a guy and a tremendous athlete. And that's a great, great Super Stud cast. Very proud of it.
We want to remind everyone the rest of the story will be coming up very soon. We're going to do something a little different for this month and the rest of the story because of the overwhelming reaction we've received to the two-part Super Studcast number 13 on the Knoxville Wrestling War. We are going to take your questions all about everything that transpired in 1979 in Knoxville. There's a few different ways that you could submit your questions. Of course, Ron will be putting a post up on his Facebook page. The Facebook page, of course, is Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. And also, we will have something put up on Patreon for all you patrons where you can post your questions there, and we will try to get through as many of them as possible on the special Rest of the Story, the Knoxville Wrestling War. Those posts will be up on Wednesday, February 13th, and that gives you 1 week to leave questions for the Rest of the Story, which will be released on Tuesday, February 26th. Ron, where are we going next week on the Studcast?
Well, you know, it's decision time. It just seems like one thing right after another here. I'm going to have to make another huge decision in my career. I've never been a heel in 4 years of wrestling at this point. Never, ever had a match in which I was a heel. And I got to make a very difficult decision here as to which way to go as I start my Knoxville years. You know, I have to look at the crew. I have to look at the future. I have to decide, do I want to be a heel for the first time in my life? Is that where I really need to go from here? So next week, I think we're going to find out what my decision is. And we're also going to find out where the name, the Tennessee Stud, really came from.
Ron Fuller's Studcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. For the Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, I'm the great Brian Last. The story continues next week.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.